Aaron Rodgers goes down, can the Packers possibly make it work with Brett Hundley under center? Elsewhere, the Chiefs finally lose, two teams left for dead pull off stunning wins on the road, and Adrian Peterson turns back the clock. We're breaking down everything from a wild week 6 on the MMQB 10 Things podcast. Hello and welcome to the MMQB 10 Things podcast. I am Gary Gramling. He is Andy Benoit. We are through week 6, and week 6 was insane. Monster injuries. We'll obviously start with Aaron Rodgers at the top of the show. There were also just a couple of games where teams that were absolutely left for dead ended up pulling up huge road wins, quality road wins against good opponents. This was a bizarro week.
It was, and the Rodgers thing, it's, I've always been like a next man up guy. There are certain players that is not true for. We lost two of them last week in J.J. Watt and Odell Beckham. And for most teams, it's not true with the quarterback. It's obviously not true for Green Bay. I hate this. And if any time you find yourself saying, oh, they're putting a dress on the quarterback, you know, how can they flag those hits? And I'm not saying this was a late hit. But anytime you complain about that, just remember how this feels today when a marquee team and one of the three or four marquee players of the league just vanishes all at once. I don't mind them taking care of quarterbacks because I think it's too important to have them out on the field. It's an entertainment business, Gary.
Number one.
It is, and this is topping number one. This is what went down in Minnesota. Aaron Rodgers, broken collarbone on his throwing side, reportedly. He had the broken collarbone on the non-throwing side back in 2013. This was going to keep him out for a long time, potentially the rest of the season. And like you said, Andy, if you are sort of a casual football fan, I think two of the guys, maybe the two guys at the top of your list that you tune in to watch are Aaron Rodgers and Odell Beckham Jr., just as far as pure excitement for a for maybe not a diehard, but an interested football fan. And having both these guys out for the season is, it is depressing.
Yes, because it fundamentally changes both of those offenses. And I think J.J. Watt changes Houston as well over there. We mentioned him. But where do they go from here then, Gary? What do they do? And this, you might have to do the talking because Brett Hundley is not someone I'm familiar with because he has not taken any meaningful until today, and I haven't obviously seen the film on the game yet. He has not taken any meaningful NFL snaps. And can they redefine the offense? They're going to have to do something. How much can they do? I mean, they're in a tough spot here, too. It's you and I have a different philosophy, I know. You kind of like it when the backup QB is different than the starter stylistically. I prefer to have them be similar. There is no one similar to Aaron Rodgers, so I guess you win the debate on this round.
No, I mean, ideally, you want a guy who is good and similar to your starter. I prefer the sort of, the sort of playground creator type of guy, if you're talking about, like in Dallas, if you're talking about like a Kellen Moore type or Cooper Rush, whoever's the number two there in Dallas right now, or if you have like a Mark Sanchez type as your number two, I prefer a guy who maybe has some unique skills that don't necessarily translate to a traditional pro-style offense, but that's kind of what Hundley is. And look, Hundley came out of UCLA in 2014, fifth-round pick, of course. He's been in the system for a while. So, I mean, yes, he hasn't been on the field. Maybe he's had a chance to improve a little bit. Obviously, he hasn't gotten a lot of practice reps either since Aaron Rodgers has not missed any time since Hundley came to the league. He's mobile. He can run around. And yet you cross your fingers and hope he's developed as a passer. But I guess the question is, can you take a guy like this and can Mike McCarthy kind of just go to work and pull a couple all-nighters this week and maybe reinvent the run game and put some creative designs in there? And that can be something they can, I guess sort of buy some time with at this point. And again, Rodgers might be out for the year and the Packers are not going to win the Super Bowl with Brett Hundley in all likelihood, especially with his defense. But, can you get a couple weeks where you can roll out some new things that no one's seen on film in the run game and sort of build it that way?
Yeah, that's going to be part A of that discussion. And part B of the discussion is what do they do in the passing game? Because at the end of it, the only time I've ever seen a team just run the ball and do nothing else over the course of a season was the Tim Tebow Broncos that year. And that didn't work. You know, I mean, it worked a little while. They got to the playoffs. I mean, that was a nice season they had, but that was not sustainable over the long haul. I guess we're not talking about sustainability past this season, but let's assume they can't run the ball 35 times a game for 200 yards. Let's just set it there, and then we say, well, what do you do in the passing game? And the interesting part, I think there's two parts that are interesting here, Gary. One is it's not an overly complex offense. We've been over that before. Mm-hmm. Slants and flat routes and those things mixed together, usually that's the backbone of the offense. The other thing you mentioned is the runaround guy, have a Sandlot type of guy. If Hundley can be that kind of guy, this is a team that practices that stuff. And they don't just practice it like, okay, run around now, everybody get comfortable with Aaron making a play. They have some very specific rules in their scramble drills. Their scramble drills are basically extensions of their offense, the way they play. They have very specific rules that they practice and that guys have learned over time. And like the new guy, Martellus Bennett, he told our Jenny Vrenches the other day, he said he went up to Rodgers on the field after his big catch, the Thursday night game against Chicago. He had a 25-yarder, and he said, hey, Aaron, I finally got the scramble drill figured out. I mean, it's a mental thing. So they're set up to just plug in somebody and let him run around. That will not disrupt the offense the way it would with a lot of other teams.
Yeah, another problem here is the Packers just lost three offensive linemen in this game. Brian Bulaga with a concussion, David Bakhtiari with a hamstring, and Lane Taylor with an ankle injury. So, you know, even if you were going to say, well, maybe we can do the Jaguars type of thing where we're just going to hammer away with the run game and set up some easy play action stuff and hopefully protect some leads here, that seems like it probably went out the window with all the injuries up front. So there, I mean, look, Mike McCarthy, they, you know, there's a little bit of sensitivity in Green Bay about, you know, how Mike McCarthy is perceived and everyone's sort of heaping the praise on Aaron Rodgers all the time and overlooking McCarthy a little bit. He's got his work cut out for him.
Now, it sounds like
it's just kind of a mission impossible. So I don't want to be like, see, this guy can't coach. He can't win games with Brett Hundley on short notice here with no offensive line. This is rough.
They'll have to do that scramble drill. They're going to have to do it then if they've got all those offensive line issues as well. We'll see. They're 4-2. They have some cushion. Maybe we find out the injury's not as bad. I mean, it's a broken bone, but, you know, what kind of break? We'll see. I mean, you know, let's keep the optimistic side open, but you got to keep playing football, too. You can't just stop the season. They're 4-2. They're in first place still. They're tied for it. Minnesota's got the tiebreaker, obviously. Minnesota's got a quarterback who's hurt as well. So this is not an exclusive Packers issue.
No, I know. Well, coming into this week, it was all about the Vikings and their question marks at quarterback, and can they sort of patch it together and sort of complement this elite defense? I mean, obviously the Vikings are so good defensively. There's a lot more leeway to work with here as far as their offense goes. They do have some questions coming down the line. I mean, when's Bradford going to be ready? Teddy Bridgewater apparently is going to be ready soon. Does he beat Bradford back? And if so, after missing a year and a half, do you plug him in instead of Case Keenum? So lots of quarterback questions here. The Vikings, I mean, I think they're clearly the favorite in the NFC North at this point. And, if you're, you know, not to shortchange the Vikings here, obviously they won this one handily after Rodgers goes out, in the second series, end up picking off Hundley three times and just sort of, wore down the Packers in this one. It never really felt like it was in doubt once Rodgers went down and the Vikings got a early 7-0 lead here.
Yeah, and I know different discussion, different time on Case Keenum, but he's done a really nice job. He's looked like a backup at times. He has limitations, but he has looked totally prepared every time he's been on the field, and there have been times that he has owned the game, and that's a lot of credit needs to go to Pat Shurmur, their offensive coordinator, and Kevin Stefanski, their quarterback coach there, getting Keenum ready. And remember, Keenum did not play in anything close to a pro-style offense in the NFL. So his only experience with this kind of stuff he's doing now has been as an NFL player, as an NFL backup. Mm-hmm. He's probably learning a lot of the game on the fly a little bit, too, with all these reps he's getting. I think he's done a pretty nice job there this season.
Yeah, and real quick, Andy, on the optimism side for the Packers. I just, right before we started taping, I just gotten off the phone with Jacob Feldman, who does the MMQB Morning Huddle newsletter. And obviously his lead is Brett Hundley And his stat was that since 2000, preseason passer rating, Brett Hundley, second overall.
No.
Qualified
no,
quarterbacks.
No, wow.
That will get your that will really warm your heart, I know, Andy.
Yeah, there you go, Packer fans.
And you can wonder about number one. When we get to number one's team, I will unveil him.
Oh, you're going to tell us who the preseason number one is? I remember,
yes,
I always remember
Travis
Jervey was like the greatest preseason running back I ever saw, and I always think of him on preseason. That's about the last time I watched preseason, too. I was
Travis Jervey, and you know who else? I guess running backs is something that sort of translates. I remember Willie Parker had a couple of big preseason games before he was anyone, and Fred Jackson was, you know, as an undrafted guy, sort of had a couple big preseason games, and those guys ended up being pretty good pros.
Well, there you go. Yeah, and also, remember, Drew Bledsoe got hurt once, and that's how Tom Brady came in, right? We're supposed to say that as well at this point of the show.
Yeah, and look, I mean, look, Hundley coming off the bench is much different than having a game plan prepared for you over the course of a week and getting to prepare as a starter. So, you know, we're not gonna punt the season quite yet for the Packers, but obviously this is a nightmare scenario. I mean, we saw a guy, look, Jacoby Brissett emerge as a pretty good player for the Colts this year. Maybe it's sort of in that, you know, that sort of vein. Case Keenum, Jacoby Brissett, someone like that. Maybe they stay afloat.
Number two.
Well, let's go into topic number two. This was the best game of the day. This was Steelers at Chiefs. The Chiefs finally lose. The 72 Dolphins can do their, I don't know, whatever they do.
Champagne.
When they celebrate these things, yeah. Champagne, ginger ale, whatever they get going. But all the questions were, we'll start with the offense side of the ball for the Steelers. All the questions were about Roethlisberger, what's the deal with Roethlisberger, can Roethlisberger play? The Steelers came in here and basically did the exact same thing they did to the Chiefs last January, which was basically ram it down their throat with Le'Veon Bell. The Chiefs were pretty light in the box a lot with Sorensen up there. Next to Derek Johnson, they had to tweak that as the game went on, and it sort of didn't quite make a difference. But one thing, we talked about the five interceptions last week, obviously, with Roethlisberger. He threw an interception early when Antonio Brown stopped a route he shouldn't have, and Brown, right on the field, you could see, he said, my bad, and it clearly was his bad. So it was like, well, there's one more bad break for Roethlisberger. But then at the end of this game, to put it away, Brown had gotten behind Philip Gaines on a little out and up. Roethlisberger underthrew it badly. Gaines, it went through his hands, bounced off his helmet. Brown grabs it, runs 51 yards for the touchdown. Game is sealed at that point. So Roethlisberger finally catches a little bit of a break here. He wasn't great. He was asked to manage the game a little bit more today. But, I mean, look, Steelers ran the ball. Defense was just incredible. They match up really well with the Chiefs, and you know, that's how they got it done today.
Yeah, and the talk has been about Roethlisberger as he washed up, and I wrote this week, I don't think he is. Now, that doesn't mean he's not in decline a little bit, and my reasoning for that he's not washed up is that when he does start to decline, and maybe that has happened now, maybe you do see that, when it begins, I think he has evolved enough that, you said game manager, Gary, I think he can be that kind of quarterback and be quite successful as that kind of quarterback. Now, that means the offense needs to go through Le'Veon Bell, which it did in this game. Le'Veon Bell ran all over the Chiefs, just like he did in the divisional round game last season. But they're made up to survive any change at the quarterback spot. Now, they've got weapons around Big Ben. They don't rely on those deep, late-in-the-down passes that he's made his career about. This was a good, stylistically, this was a good game for Pittsburgh, and we probably need to talk about that defense, too. I wasn't sure how that defense, with all that speed they have, and mainly we're talking Ryan Shazier, how they would do against the misdirection concepts of the Chiefs. It's great to be fast, but when you're fast and a little bit undisciplined, which they are in that front seven, and that's, I think they've got some freedom to do that, I bet, but you don't ever coach your guys to be undisciplined. But when you're like that, you can be susceptible to the stuff Kansas City throws at you, those end-arounds, the jet sweeps, the multi-option read plays. And they bottled up Kansas City's offense completely in this game today. Yeah. That's a real nice performance by what I think's a rising top five defense.
Yeah, I mean, the final was 19-13. The Chiefs did not have a first down in this game until there were less than 2 minutes to go in the first half. It was utter domination. Steelers were just really fast. Romo made the point. They played a lot of zone. Everyone's got their eyes on Alex Smith. Everything's in front of them. And they were just physically better than the Chiefs in this game. And the Chiefs only got that field goal in the first half. Of all things, the Steelers get a safety on a bad snap, and then they end up muffing the safety punt after that. Chiefs don't get a first down, but it sets up a field goal for them, and that's how the Chiefs got on the board. But so a couple of weird bounces, weird breaks in this game. But the
is
Steelers
that, Gary, is that the only way you can get a 1 point swing on a play? Serious question. A safety, with the ensuing punt safety,
ensuing
whatever you call it, like free
muffs.
Kick. Leads to an automatic, not an automatic field goal, but that's what they got directly out of it. That's a 1 point swing. I bet that's the only way you can get a true 1 point swing, isn't it?
Yeah.
And what am I forgetting here? You can. What if you score a touchdown and then the opponent returns your blocked extra point for a 2 point defensive score? That's a 4 point swing. So that's not it.
Can you manage to get like safety field goal safety? It would probably involve someone running out of their own end zone.
We're talking over the course of a play, aren't we?
Well, it's not a play. If it's a one-point swing, there's a series of plays.
Okay, a play with an ensuing series.
But
okay,
I get it, though.
Sure.
I mean, it makes it. It's all sort of directly off the safety.
Your safety field goal safety, that's got a lot of transition to it. That almost resets after the field goal, doesn't it? Each team is involved, and then it ends. Team A got a safety. Team B kicked the field goal. That's the end of the sequence.
I get. Well, it depends what you define as a swing. We'll do a whole show on how you define a swing one of these days.
Yeah, get the Freakonomics guys on it, too. They have good podcasts. We ought to just be letting them do this anyway.
What's a swing, guys? The Chiefs, I don't know. I don't think you panic if you're the Chiefs.
No.
They just offensively, they don't match up well with the Steelers, apparently. That's what we see time and time again. I believe this was the sixth straight Steelers win over the Chiefs when Roethlisberger was healthy. The Chiefs got him once when they had Landry Jones under center. I almost called him Laron Landry. But it was not. They went with the quarterback, and that was Landry Jones in that game when Roethlisberger was out. But you're not concerned. You would have liked to get the win and sort of keep the ironclad grip on that number one seed in the AFC in place, but didn't quite work out. And we'll see what happens going forward. I guess that's sort of their Achilles heel, though. They're light up front when they. I don't know. Are they lighter with Sorensen in the box as opposed to Barry?
Oh, yeah.
Is there that big a difference between those two guys?
Well, they're lighter with Sorensen. They're lighter with a safety, and that's what they do. They tend to go dime safety. So if you can run the ball out of three wide receiver sets, you can get them into a one linebacker, one safety, or one dime safety type of front up there. So a 3-2, a 4-2, whatever their structure. Typically it's a 4-2. And that's what Pittsburgh did to them a little bit in that divisional game last year. Pittsburgh also at that point was a power running team. And I think if I recall, they used a lot of heavier formations as well. But in that divisional game, Kansas City totally changed their defensive fronts in the fourth quarter. And they made it, they lined up in a way where Pittsburgh could no longer double team block. They just put five guys up on the defensive line and said, now it's one-on-one blocking rather than this inside zone, because Le'Veon Bell is so good running behind double teams of inside zone. So I assumed we'd see more of that today. I'm surprised Bell did as well as he did, because I thought in that divisional game, if that game had lasted five quarters instead of four, Kansas City would have won it, because they figured out Pittsburgh's running game in the fourth quarter and they totally took it away. And obviously we didn't see any carryover for that in this game today.
Yeah, Bell had a couple of just big time, only Le'Veon Bell can do it runs in this game, including one that got called back by a legitimate holding call that helped him a little bit, but it was still a pretty exceptional play. One more note on the Steelers here. Martavis Bryant, according to Ian Rapoport, has requested a trade after this one. He's been losing snaps to Juju Smith-Schuster, the rookie. Smith-Schuster is you know, he's not the dynamic sort of downfield threat that Bryant is, but he's been doing some good work out of the slot, and he's good for the run game. He's very good on the perimeter as a blocker as well, but they have not been able to really find a role for Bryant in his return from the season-long suspension.
Well, and buyer beware on that one, because when you put on the film, Bryant's talent is extraordinary. Absolutely jumps off the tape. I'm still getting over that week two game against Minnesota where he could have easily had 300 yards receiving if every time he beat Trey Waynes, the ball had ended up in his hands.
Yeah.
The problem is the ball doesn't always end up in his hands for a variety of reasons. And anytime a guy with that much talent, we know he has off-field baggage, that's obvious, but now it's kind of, I'm not saying he has baggage on the field, but someone's underachieving here. I mean, he is too talented to be losing snaps to anybody, and he's legitimately losing snaps. I forgot he was out there when I watched their film last week. And there's just, you got to be careful with those guys, because everybody's going to think they can coach him. And if he's not thriving in an environment like Pittsburgh, where it's pretty player friendly, and you've got a QB that's been there a while and it's established, and you get a trouble off the field, hey, we're here when you get back, you know, if he can't get along there, I don't know where he's going to thrive in the NFL.
Yeah. I mean, certainly someone would be interested in kicking the tires on him. He is, he's a free agent after the year. He's making, $615,000 this year. So it's, you know, depending on what the price tag is and depending on whether the ties are going to be severed here in Pittsburgh, he's certainly a guy teams are going to check in on.
When he gets to the 8 to 12 yard depth in his route, he's the fastest player in the NFL in that little part of the route. His second gear from 1 to 7, he's very good. 1 to 7 yards, 8 to 12, he's unstoppable. And then he continues at speed too. He can maintain that 8 to 12 yard range of speed. That's how he's running by you. He's got a long stride. He's willowy, can change directions. I've always thought he's Mike Wallace with flexibility is how I've described him. He's a really good talent, but we're saying talent. We're not saying good player.
Number three.
Let's jump ahead to topic number three, and this is going to start a sort of a back-to-back topic here. I know some of you folks, some of our international listeners, like to watch the games on Monday on Game Pass and aren't always thrilled when games are spoiled. These next two games, this is like spit take corner. These were two of the biggest upsets certainly of the year, and just in recent memory, I can't remember teams in this dire situation, just left for dead situations, playing this well on the road and getting wins. We're going to start with the Sunday nighter. This was the Giants going to Denver. I mean,
can I ask you something first before you get into your little intro here? You just teed up the international listeners, and I thought you were going to do them a nice favor and say, hey, we're going to talk about Giants Broncos. Fast forward ahead if you want to not hear the score.
Well, and that's instead, implied, right?
I don't think that's implied. I think you did to them what you did to me. Ironically, last time we saw Brock Osweiler on Sunday Night Football, which we did again in this game here tonight, where I emailed you at the game and said, hey, I'm starting overtime. I'll record the podcast when we're done. And you emailed back and said, won't be very long. And I thought, well, thanks a lot, you son of a crap, because now I know overtime is not going to be a tie, and I'm going to figure out what happens. You gave me a spoiler on the game. I think you just spoiled it for our best listeners, our international guys.
You were begging for a spoiler that night. Why did you even tell me about that?
Why? What do you mean? Because I was trying to help you plan. Because
I
know
sit
you guys
here
are sitting in the studio waiting
on me. And watch cartoons until you come on, usually.
Yeah, and I thought, wouldn't it be polite for me to communicate to you and the guys at Cadence 13, digital media back then, what time I'll be on so they can plan accordingly? And you spoiled the game, and I think you spoiled it here because now they know the outcome of, I'm not going to say it, they know the outcome of Giants Broncos, though.
I can't believe we're reliving the time that you were completely wrong.
I can't either. I thought you learned.
Topic number three. This is Giants Broncos, and look, I don't know. We thought the Giants might never score a point again, and they end up going into Denver and pulling this one out. One of the questions for the Giants was, will they even play for Ben McAdoo anymore? You know, is there mutiny in the locker room? The Dominique Rogers-Cromartie situation where he left a practice and then came back for a meeting, and whatever happened in the meeting, it ended with Rogers-Cromartie being suspended indefinitely, which tells you it probably didn't go so well. No Odell Beckham, no Brandon Marshall, no Sterling Shepard in this game. I can't remember a bigger mismatch between secondary and wide receivers than we had on Sunday night, and they won.
Well, plus, and plus their offensive line.
They shuffled their offensive line again, yeah.
Yeah, and it's one of the league's worst running games that went into, by far, the league's best run defense. Statistically, they've dominated quality running backs.
Yeah.
And the Giants steadily ran the ball down their throat. Here's what I'll say about this. I saw every snap of the game, and we could talk about, well, reshuffling the line, that helped, and I think it did. In fact, we ought to have a quick conversation about that. But here's the overriding point that everyone needs to always remember. In the NFL, they're all good players. The other team has good players, too. These are all professional athletes. They're all from the top 0.0001% of football players. So the margin between the top and bottom of that 0.0001% is inherently small. And you should never be surprised, never be shocked. I guess we always have room for a surprise, and I was surprised by this game. But don't ever be shocked at the outcome of an NFL game, because when you watch these guys closely, the bad teams are almost as good as the good teams a lot of the time.
That's fair enough. And look, another part was, I mean, the Broncos coming off the bye week. And this, you know, there was no, like, short preparation or anything like that. There were no major injuries for them to overcome. They had a couple guys who ended up banged up tonight, which sort of short-circuited any comeback chance, but they had already fallen behind. And it was almost like, look, the only thing the Broncos had to do was not get gashed by any big runs and not turn the ball over, and they end up doing both those things a couple of times in this one. And they end up...
Yeah, they did.
I mean, 148
Simeon,
on the ground
Simeon's
is... Let's go Simeon. Let's talk Trevor Simeon.
Well, Simeon is a very specific QB that needs to be – he's a puzzle piece, and he needs to be controlled, and we've seen that a little bit this year. The Buffalo game, he had some bad interceptions or bad turnovers in that one as well, and that's what happened here. That interception to Janoris Jenkins was totally inexcusable on every type of front. I mean, he's thrown to a tight end running a flat route, and he threw it to a cover two corner who's the best at pick sixes in the league probably right now.
Yeah.
I mean, that's there's been
Benny
too
Fowler,
much of that
actually,
with Simeon
who
this
kinda,
year.
Kind of moves like a tight end, but
who is it to?
What wasn't it Benny Fowler on that route?
Oh, maybe it was. Whatever it was, the route, it doesn't matter because the route is killed by the coverage.
Yeah.
And if he's going to be their quarterback, that's the kind of thing he has to under that route needs to be eliminated the second the ball is snapped, because he can see there's two high safeties the second the ball is snapped. And look, interceptions happen, mistakes happen. He knows that. My concern is we've seen a few of those now from him this season. And where we've seen them, they haven't come so much like that. They've come when he gets out of structure. When he gets late into the down, he's a pretty good on-the-move player, but he is not a great quarterback late in the down. He's not a steady, reliable quarterback late in the down. So just something to keep in mind is they have a little bit of a concern there with Simeon. He's had too many turnovers in too many different ways, and they're not going to get to where they're capable of going if that remains the case.
Yeah. And, as far as the Giants go, they shuffle the offensive line. Bobby Hart out, Justin Pugh to right tackle. DJ Fluker steps in at right guard, which gives them three first-round picks on that offensive line.
I think what they've done, I've always had this conversation with coaches around the league. It's a fun one to have, and there's no right or wrong. It's a philosophical discussion. What's the purpose of your offensive line? Would you rather have really, is it about accentuating your strengths and finding dominant linemen and putting them in the best spots? Or is it about minimizing your weaknesses and finding the combination of linemen that's least likely to get beat? So taking safe and average over risky but potentially great. Mm-hmm. And with Bobby Hart in there at right tackle, I think that's my sense is that's how the Giants have felt. That's our safest offensive line. We're least likely to get destroyed by that offensive line. And part of that's because I think they feel Justin Pugh's more comfortable at guard. But when they put Pugh out at tackle, put in Fluker, that former first-round pick, they move John Jerry over, they're putting guys in their more dynamic positions. Now, it's a little bit riskier because Pugh's a better guard than tackle, but Pugh's a better player than Bobby Hart, so we're going to take that kind of chance. It just gets into the discussion of what's your belief. Do you hide weaknesses in your offensive line, or do you go out and try to accentuate strengths? And they're not one and the same. They sometimes are. In a good world, they are, but a lot of times you have to make these kind of decisions. And the Giants, they've been evolving. They're changing their mind mid-season here on it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how much worse it could have gotten, but they found something in the run game. They, at least statistically, they got a 47-yard run from Darqua at one point. They were set up with short fields and a couple of turnovers, but ultimately they win a game. Evan Engram ended up being, which should surprise no one, he was sort of the focal point in the passing game here. Giants receivers end up combining, looks like, two catches for 22 yards in this one. That was one for Lewis and one for Tavares King. But boy, it's like the blueprint for the Giants to win this game was so specific, and it worked out that way.
Did, and good for them. I mean, that's a nice win. It's going to be hard to get these type of wins every week, mm-hmm. But you can only play the team that's in front of you that week, and they did it this one.
And by the way, Ben McAdoo also did not call plays tonight. He gave it to Mike Sullivan, the offense coordinator. He's been an assistant there for a while. He was QB's coach before that. So, look, they were on the verge of almost total collapse coming into this game,
and they
ended up leaving Denver with a win.
It doesn't mean McAdoo's not running the offense still, by the way. Don't think that means he's handed over controls necessarily. It's play calling is very much a collective effort, and ultimately one guy makes the decision. But in scenarios like McAdoo can still say, hey, we're running the ball here, and Sullivan goes like that. The big decisions are still Ben McAdoo's, as they are of any head coach.
Number four.
All right, topic number four here. This was another stunner. This was the Dolphins go to Atlanta, come away with a win. This was a game that the Falcons were up 17-0 at halftime, and with everything the Dolphins have gone through this season and in the past week, specifically with offensive line or former offensive line coach Chris Forster, this seemed like it was going to completely get away from Miami, and they claw back into it and end up pulling out the 2017 win, and it was pretty unbelievable. And Jay Cutler didn't really get going in this game. It was still a very sort of Cutler-y, thrown off his back foot a lot, sort of an uneven performance. But Dolphins up front, even with Mike Pouncey leaving this game at halftime with a concussion, they pushed the Falcons around up front, which I don't know. It's a red flag for Atlanta, I guess. They've dropped two straight home games against very beatable teams.
Yeah, Buffalo a few weeks ago, then the bye week, then Miami. Miami's been horrible on offense this season. I mean, garbage is what Gase called one of their performances a few weeks ago, and I bet you he'd still call it that for certain aspects of their offense. There's something to be said for winning when you're still playing poorly. I mean, that's the best of all worlds, because if you're going to be playing poorly, you got some growing pains to get through, some things to iron out. Most teams, bad teams, they lose when they're going through that. The Dolphins have found a way to get to 3-2, and at some point that offense is bound to get going because it's too well designed. And I was going to say Gase has a great feel for these cover three type of defenses, but you're right. The running game is a factor in this one. It was not the Jay Cutler show, of course. And the other thing is Atlanta, as well as Seattle, who did not play this week, but those teams really are not cover three defenses anymore. They're more man-to-man.
Yeah.
So that's something to keep in mind. Atlanta's playing New England next week. That'll be a big factor, just like it was in the last matchup, that man coverage. Gase will get this offense even better, and then where will Miami be then?
Yeah. I mean, look, Miami, they won this game up front, both sides of the ball. Defensively, they were excellent, especially the second half. Offensively, the offensive line got it done in the run game. They got a little bit of help. Grady Jarrett erased a Deion Jones interception that might have put this game away with a really boneheaded and correctly called roughing the passer call, where he took about three steps after Cutler had let the INT go. And just one more note on this game. The Dolphins, before the season, decided not to extend Jarvis Landry. He'll be a free agent after the year. Landry made a couple of absolutely monstrous plays, one on a third and long that he it was a catch and run through traffic for the first down, and he came up with a fourth and two catch in traffic. He also caught it was a neat little design on his touchdown. But yeah, I mean, this was one that where they had to really scrap for every yard in the passing game. No Devontae Parker, and boy, you just think about what this offense might be without Jarvis Landry right now. They certainly wouldn't have won this game.
Number five.
All right, let's go. Topic number five. That is Adrian Peterson. Debut in Arizona. We all kind of wondered exactly what his role would be there, just because he is a guy who is limited in the passing game, and we saw it didn't work out in New Orleans, despite the fact that he fits their run scheme well. And this he was used heavily, and they established him early, and then they worked off of him.
Yep, I'm 0-for-1 on Adrian Peterson in Arizona. I got asked about that on a lot of radio shows this week, and I wrote about it when the trade happened. I wrote the breaking news analysis on it, and I said it really doesn't change anything for Peterson. He'll get 30 snaps a game instead of 9 or 10, 15 to 18 touches, and it'll probably kind of dwindle from there because he doesn't fit their passing game in Arizona. He does fit their running game stylistically, but that was the case in New Orleans as well. And they still keep him off the field because you become too predictable when you have a run-only running back on the field. And Andre Ellington is similar to Alvin Kamara for the Saints in that you can move him around the formation. He gives you a five-receiver set, essentially, when you go to spread empty, which the Saints did a lot and which the Cardinals do even more. All of that's still in play. Now, listen, I'm wrong right now, but it's a long season.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't go scrambling in your fantasy leagues to go get it. I mean, go get it. I guess you can. I don't know fantasy.
Yes.
He's a pretty good number two or three.
He just went for 134 and two touchdowns. So you can go get him in your fantasy league. Just
go get him. Go get him if you can get him. But don't go bragging about it to everybody saying you've got the championship locked up. It's a long season still. It went well today. I'm still skeptical of Peterson's role in Arizona's offense.
Well, they established him early. This was the nice part, and this was a game. Look, Bucks haven't been great in the pass rush, so you figured Carson Palmer might have a little more of a prayer early on in this one. But they established Peterson early, and then the Bucks had to react to Peterson steamrolling them, and it just opened up things in the passing game that really hadn't been opened the past couple weeks for Arizona. Palmer ends up throwing 22 times. Only in this game, and they held on. The other note from this game, Jameis Winston suffered a shoulder injury. The only info we have right now is X-rays were negative. Ryan Fitzpatrick comes off the bench and does it was a very Ryan Fitzpatrick playground performance here. Ends up throwing three touchdowns, two interceptions in the comeback effort. I mean, they were down 31-0 in this one, and Fitzpatrick brought them back within striking distance, but the final ends up 38-33. And, I don't know. The Bucs are they have some issues on defense, and, you know, obviously if Winston's going to miss any time, they're going to have to rethink what they do offensively.
Yeah, and they'd need to get that pass rush better in Tampa Bay. There's no excuse for that. Noah Spence came on strong in the second half of last season. Where has he been? Gerald McCoy, you're not going to criticize him. He's the guy that's always producing. Everybody else around McCoy, Robert Ayers has been quiet. Chris Baker, who's a much improved pass rusher in the second half of his career, he hasn't made any noise. And he was their big free agent acquisition from Washington. It's inexcusable to not be getting more pressure against an Arizona offensive line that's easily been the worst in the NFL. And what makes it so inexcusable is the Bucs are a zone-based defense. They're designed to win off their pass rush. That's the only way those fast linebackers and those ball-jumpy corners are going to do anything for you, and it didn't work in this game.
Number six.
Let's go ahead to topic number six. This is the Chargers and the Raiders. L.A. goes up to Oakland. I guess everything's a home away from home from them. Win another one on the road here. But, look, this was Derek Carr back in the lineup. What did you think of Carr? It looked like he was a little bit limited. They were a little bit safe with him today.
Yeah, they were, and I don't quite understand that, to be honest with you. I think that offense needs to open up a little bit. They do. Now, in fairness to coordinator Todd Downing, their running game, let's just stop that. It's one of their parts of their foundation. They have two elements, an inside zone running game, a power downhill running a game, and then that spread offensive passing game, that quick strike passing game. They've become limited in both of those. The running game's not producing the way it was. That's not on Todd Downing. I mean, he's not the one running the ball. That's on Mike Tice, their O-line coach, to fix. It's mostly on Marshawn Lynch and those offensive linemen. Everybody has to play better. That's straightforward. So Downing's not getting the help there. That spread passing game that they're relying on a lot, it has not been as imaginative as you need it to be. And they have not done a lot with designer route combinations. They played this way last year where they did the spread passing game and the power running game. But Bill Musgrave would put in these wrinkles. And he'd get Amari Cooper the ball by design in space at times. And he'd take some shots. We haven't seen that very much. They had a great one, the Holton touchdown against Denver a few weeks ago, and I couldn't believe they didn't do similar concepts with that. They had Holton in motion. They put him in, I believe he was in a bunch, and the pre-snap gyrating compromised the defense, and it was great coaching. I think they're capable of that. Downing obviously got the job for a reason. They need to get back to doing that because their guys are not winning right now. Amari Cooper's not having a good season. Crabtree is unreliable at times. He's reliable in that you should keep going to him because he's an extraordinary ball hand plucker catcher guy, but he's going to have some drops too. And these are receivers that are going to be at their best when you're designing plays for them. Everybody who has played everybody who's played Los Angeles this year has gone after their linebackers and coverage downfield with designer routes, mainly deep over routes. We talked about that with the Falcons a lot last season. Remember that, Gary? How much trouble their linebackers had against inside slot receivers running across the field against them. Well, the Chargers have had a lot of trouble with that as well. I can't believe we didn't see any shots of that in this game today. We didn't see hardly anything from Oakland.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing I could think was they just didn't really put anything in there for Carr because they were so afraid of him taking any sort of shot over the course of this game. But, yeah.
Well, he shouldn't be out there. If that's the case, if you can't run basic deep over routes against cover three defense that has struggled against that, then you have to consider if you're not putting Carr out there too soon. If you're not going to let him be Derek Carr, what's the point? And you're probably right, because Joey Bosa and Melvin Ingram, I bet they're the scariest pass-rushing tandem in the NFL to coaches. There might be better ones. Fans might find like Khalil Mack and Bruce Irvin in this game alone might be better. But when you put on the film, Bosa and Ingram are the most terrifying because of how quick they are laterally and how that can lead to the fumbles, the big blindside hits. So maybe they really were extra concerned about keeping Carr protected, but if that's the case, they neutered their offense and it cost them.
It did. Also costing them was Lynch basically volleying a short pass for an interception in the red zone and missed opportunity there. And I guess it was just nice to see the Chargers make a late field goal in a game to come away with a win.
Yeah, it was. I thought that Lynch play was more on Carr, by the way, Gary. Lynch has not been good in their passing game either. And if a more dynamic running back probably can stretch out and make that catch. But Carr had poor ball placement. That's where it began. And Rich Gannon thought that on the broadcast. And Rich Gannon's one of the best broadcasters out there, just to give him some credit.
Yep. Yeah, and just a couple quick notes. Very nice drive by Phillip Rivers. They took the last 4:09 off the clock on that game-winning drive, and it ended up a 17-16 final. Raiders were stuck on 16 because of a high snap on an extra point that turned into a missed PAT. Now, granted, the way the Chargers moved the ball in that last drive, they certainly had enough time to go for a touchdown if a touchdown is what they needed. Instead, they They settle for the 32-yard field goal. Nick Novak splits the uprights. Chargers get a late win against a division opponent, and both these teams are sitting at 2-4 right now.
Yep, and Raiders, that linebacker issue is not going away. They're going to have to figure out how to play around that. They just don't have the talent at linebacker, and that's what happened on that final drive. Melvin Gordon, rather, he converted a couple of third and shorts, and he hurt them all day in the underneath passing game.
Number seven.
Topic number seven here, we're going to go Patriots-Jets. This ended up being a Patriots win, although there were certainly there's a lot to talk about here. Well, no, there's two things to talk about here, and we'll push aside the controversy to begin with, and I just want to talk about the Patriots' defense. I have been fairly confident the Patriots will really get it turned around defensively. No Stephon Gilmore in this one. They end up allowing a 300-yard passer for the sixth straight time, I believe the number is. And this was Josh McCown, of course. And again, a couple of sort of out-of-structure plays beating the Patriots for big gains in this one. But, you know, overall, I mean, 354 for McCown in this one. It's a passing offense that's not particularly good.
Correct. It's too much. I mean, the Jets... You can't be giving up that kind of yardage to the Jets. The Jets are not set up to play that way. I mean, they're not going into a game trying to get 350-whatever yards passing. So some stuff to clean up in New England. I'm fine. You know, we didn't talk about them last week because they had the Thursday game, were very good against the Buccaneers defense. They played a lot of zone in that game. They're finding their identity in New England. They want to be a man-to-man defense. They got the corners to do it. Gilmore has been very good lately. He didn't play today, but he was very good in that last game.
In the Tampa
traveling with Mike Evans. They want to be a man-to-man defense, but they might have to be zoned for a while. And this is new. This isn't atypical of New England. They kind of evolve over the course of a season. Their defense is usually a season-long construction project that gets completed around the holidays.
Yeah. And look, the big controversy in this one was the Seferian Jenkins overturn touchdown. That was a touchdown that would have made it 24-21 Patriots. You know, Jets would have cut the lead to three there. And obviously, this ends up being a 7-point spread. Although, as we always say, game flow would be different if it was a one possession game rather than a two possession game down the stretch. But this rule, Andy. Do you? I mean, people are fired up around about it around here in New York. Basically, Seferian Jenkins made the catch. You know, he's running towards the pylon. You know, he had obviously made the catch. It wasn't like anywhere near a catch type thing. But he's going towards the pylon. Gets down there, loses control, but regains control of the ball before it's hit the ground. However, once he lost control of the ball, it is considered a loose ball. Even though it didn't hit the ground, he recovers it. He falls out of bounds. As he recovers it, he is considered out of bounds on the recovery. It is a touchback instead of a touchdown, and people are just, I don't know, ready to storm Park Avenue again.
Well, I don't like – so I was watching the Rams-Seahawks film late the other night, and I saw that open – I think it's their first drive, the Rams' first drive, and Gurley got to the front pylon.
Yes.
And I thought, well, look, this is a great design. Gurley's had success in the red zone. I start to make my notes, and then I go and I see that we're on to the next drive, and wait a minute, they don't have the points on the board. And I go, oh, that's right. That's the game. I heard about this play. The Rams got jobbed a touchdown. That doesn't seem right.
Yeah.
And every time I see this, when I watch it on TV, I kind of get it. I get the rule a little bit, like, well, you fumble, you should be punished for that. Nobody recovered. The result is don't fumble. But when I put it on film and I see it and you see what goes into building an offense and how close these plays are and how randomized fumble recoveries all are, Football Outsiders has done great studies on this. And it's basically a 50-50 toss-up on who recovers the fumble. It's not a skill to recover the fumbles is the takeaway from that. Forcing them is one thing. The Bears, remember how good they were all those years? Charles Tillman years. Yeah, Carolina for a few years when Tillman was there again.
Yeah.
But recovering the fumble is a toss-up. And so if the defense does not recover the fumble, I don't see any way, especially when it's happening near points for the offense, near the goal line, I don't understand the justification for giving the defense the ball there. I think the solution, and it's an imperfect one, I think the solution is either it's I have two ideas. Tell me what you think of these, Gary. One is the ball's at the red zone. You get the ball at the end of the red zone, so at your 20-yard line or at their 20-yard line, instead of the defensive team getting possession. You keep possession. You're backed up at the 20. New set of downs. Now, that could be unfair if you fumble on third down, though. The other one is just you lose the down. It's a 10-yard penalty from the spot of the foul, which means you're back at the 10-yard line almost every time. So it's kind of like a form of intentional grounding or something. The offense has to keep the ball, though, doesn't it?
Yeah, didn't we talk about this? Let me back up. We absolutely talked about this like a year and a half ago, I want to say. But I feel like you were arguing. Oh, no, you did argue reverse touchback. That's right. We termed it the reverse touchback.
Oh, I remember that now. I was getting nervous here because I remember thinking, yeah, my argument felt different last time. I don't remember what it was, but it felt different.
You were less forgiving of the offense.
I was less forgiving, and that was before I saw the Gurley fumble against Seattle. Because when I saw that, it put it into a different light. It wasn't. There's a different flow to the game when you're studying the film and you see who's earning what, rather than just on TV where, well, that's the bounce of the ball. It's kind of the fun hijinks of football. You lose that on the film. You just want to see who's playing well. And so these fancy
sort of
play that you talked about.
Yeah. I mean, the Gurley fumble, so what? If that ball went out of bounds 6 inches back, then it's the Rams' ball at the 6-inch line. I mean, it's too thin a margin of difference there for such a drastic.
Well, there has to be a punishment, though, right? You have to punish your offense for fumbling, though, because otherwise you could find an advantage almost. I mean, what if there has to be a punishment?
We set the downs late in the game.
Yeah, I mean, so we agree, if the offense keeps the ball, it's a loss of down. Doesn't it have to be a loss of down?
Yes, I agree.
So then,
and I like the reverse touchback.
So you're saying loss of down back all the way to the 20.
Back it to the 20, yeah.
Plus the loss of down, so then what's it down in distance? Like it becomes whatever, I guess it's almost going to always be goal to go, like always, because we're talking fumbling.
Well, no,
it
could be like a 40-yard pass that you fumble it on the pylon and then you end
you're right.
First and goal from the 20.
Okay, so it's always a first and goal then. We agree on that. If you fumble into the end zone,
first and goal.
Offense just takes it back to the 20?
Because what if it was third down? I guess you'd always rather have fourth and goal from like the 1 yard line, but no, because you can end up running off more plays. That doesn't work out. It has to be loss of down.
But
it shouldn't be loss
of
possession.
Example, though, it sure is harder to criticize the rules when you have to sit here and try to make them, and we might just wind up taking this whole part out. I mean, we don't have any idea. But your point is that, what happens if a guy is running 40 yards and he fumbles it at the very end? Then probably back to the 20. Maybe first and 10, then back to the 20.
I think it's you treat it as if the ball has just been fumbled out of bounds, and then you say, well, you fumbled it through the end zone, so now you're backed up to the 20. So if it was going to be third down, if you fumble it at the 1, now it's third down, but you're backed up to the 20 because you fumbled it through the end zone.
Okay. And so on your example, then, if it was going to be first down because the guy had ran 40 yards, now it's just first and 10 from the 20 then, not first and goal?
Oh, that's a good question.
What happens if you fumbled when you were originally outside the 20? Is it first and goal from the 20 or first and 10? I would say why don't we say this? It's whatever it was going to be. The down should not reset. If nobody recovers it, then it should be just like the play ended. So the play ended, what was the down and distance going to be when the play ended?
Yes.
Just apply that, but now the ball's at the 20. That's where
he's
you play from.
Yep.
I think that would be the most fair.
Yeah, I'd go for that.
All right, good. Well,
we got it.
So just send this to the competition committee.
Get the Jets and Patriots back out there tomorrow afternoon, and we can get it done.
Oh, you want to do it like golf or tennis or something? I could see them doing that. Baseball, maybe. Do they ever do that? Probably not.
Do that, and we'll replay Seahawks-Rams, too, the last 54 minutes of that game.
Rams wouldn't mind that. Boy, my gosh, they outplayed them in that game.
Yep. Well, there you go. That's Patriots won this game, of course, by the way. And look, game flow would have been different. It wouldn't have been necessarily an overtime game because the Patriots would have played that differently defensively down the stretch with a one-possession lead. But obviously, big swing right there. Big problem. Change that rule.
Number 8.
Topic number 8, Andy. Redskins, 49ers. Let's start with the 49ers. Another moral victory in a loss, I guess. They kept it close. They're very close to winning games this year. Haven't quite done it under Kyle Shanahan, but C.J. Beathard, we saw him, goes into the game. What'd you think of him, Andy?
I liked him. I thought he looked. They ran a different offense for him than for Brian Hoyer. They went up tempo, and it's a whole different approach. I wasn't sure why they benched Hoyer. Shanahan's been defending him. We know what Hoyer is. When he's throwing between the numbers on time, he's very good. He's a rhythmic QB, and Shanahan's offense is set up to play that way. The problem is the NFL's not set up to let you play that way. So when things break down or when you have to go outside the numbers with the ball, you get a grab bag of things from Brian Hoyer, and coaches don't like that. So I understand that now, but we weren't seeing that in this game. It was regular Brian Hoyer. Were they playing well? No, not really. But it wasn't – I didn't think – and again, I don't know exactly – Shanahan knows what the plays are supposed to look like. He's calling them. He's designing them. I'm watching this on TV, so I'm getting like a third of as good a look as he is. But I didn't see any issue with Hoyer. I don't know. So I guess Beathard was just a spark. That was the idea. We got to spark this offense, but there's no turning back from that once you do that.
Yeah.
At least I don't think there is. I guess Hoyer was on a team in Houston that did turn back to him after they benched him preemptively.
Right.
But that is rare, and this was not as preemptive. This was not the first half of the first game of the season. This was later, and I guess they're going to try to go with Beathard now.
Yeah, I mean, look, I don't think they thought about this this week, but you could say stepping back, well, look, we're going to have a very high pick in what is considered a quarterback-rich draft. We have this young guy. Maybe he's something. Maybe we can talk about trading down and getting a wealth of picks if this guy ends up being a potential starting caliber type of guy. But yeah, I mean, we'll see.
Supposedly Shanahan liked Beathard more than any other QB in the draft this year. Now, every coach tends to find a way to say something like that about their guys
after they draft them. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's just throw that out there. He's a pocket passer. He made some nice throws in this game. He looked like he knew what he was doing. So we'll see.
I was just saying Iowa. He had the reputation. He was a guy who stands in there and makes throws when he's getting drilled. He moves around well. So there's some tools to work with.
Yeah. We'll have to see. Niners have lost 5 games in a row by 3 points or less now, which I believe it's some kind of record. It's either a record in and of itself or it's a record for early in the season. They said on the broadcast, I forget which one it is. It's not the kind of record you want to have. I know that.
Yeah. Yeah. And on the side of the ball, Kirk Cousins looks like he got it going pretty well. Any thoughts on this Redskins offense? I mean, they've been trying to go a little more ball control, a little more power run game this year.
I think they've had to because their wide receivers really have not played the way they would have hoped. Doxson has taken his time to develop. Terrell Pryor has regressed from where he was a year ago in Cleveland, and that's probably not a huge surprise when you consider all that he's had to learn, and now he's got to go do it in a different system. How different the verbiage, different surroundings, everything. It's a lot of different stuff for Pryor to be handling, and he has not handled it particularly well so far. So they don't have the receivers to work with. And that changes way. That's going to change the way any offense is designed to function. But the guys that this offense runs through are all there's three of them now. There used to be two. It was Jordan Reed and Jamison Crowder a year ago, and that was partly because of the way they used the wide receivers that set up the middle of the field differently for those inside receivers. Well, now they're relying on those guys even more. They're kind of relying on Ryan Grant because they need someone to play wide receiver effectively. And then they're really relying on Chris Thompson now. And he's become a really, really good player for them, too. He's the best receiving back in the NFL this year.
Yeah. Yeah. No, he's been really good. Andy, anything else on that one?
No, I'm happy with that game. I guess we saved the Kirk Cousins to San Francisco talk for the offseason when we need to fill time.
Yeah, there you go. We'll have plenty of that. A lot of good quarterbacks coming on the market. It's actually going to be like a quarterback-rich offseason. It'll be good. Lots
free,
of good football
free web traffic for us, then. That's great for us.
Who's going to sign
Tom
Brady?
Oh, shoot. Are we at nine? Are we at the lightning round?
We're at the lightning round.
Number nine.
The fastest 45 minutes in sports. Topic number nine, the lightning round. We're starting with what was probably the wildest game of the day. I'm surprised we didn't have time in the first eight topics for this. This was Saints host the Lions, 90 points combined in this game. This was like Big 12 football or something. Except there were Saints had, what, they forced five turnovers. They had three defensive touchdowns. The Lions had a punt return touchdown from Jamal Agnew, our buddy who we talked about last week. This was a ridiculous game, and this was one where the Saints jumped out, and their defense is playing much better. It was a different kind of defensive dominance this week, but they got it done again.
So the Saints, I'm looking here, they scored three defensive touchdowns.
Yep.
And the Lions got one, plus with A'shaun Robinson with an interception. You know, he's known
to do
that,
I guess. They got the A'shaun Robinson interception return.
And then the Agnew punt return for a touchdown. So this will be one where I'm going to sit and watch the film and get almost nothing out of that because none of the film, the offense didn't correlate to offensive points and the defense didn't correlate to defensive stops.
You'll get to scout the ball-carrying skills of A'shaun Robinson and Cameron Jordan and Kenny Vaccaro.
Well, Robinson's was 2 yards, but I hear you. Yeah, I know what
you're saying. Jordan, I think, was a end zone pick. So
okay.
They all
look. I'll be honest here. We're lightning round, so I can say this. I didn't see a lot of this game, and I can tell you right now by these box scores. I mean, we'd just be pulling it out of thin air if we tried to guess how this went.
Breeze
got to take care of the ball better. Is that what you want?
Breeze threw for 186, and they scored 52 points. It's pretty
unbelievable.
Good.
Unbelievable.
If the Saints can play defense, though, that this is going to be an interesting season for the AFC South. This thing's getting turned NFC South.
You do that every time on that division.
Literally
and only that
now.
Division. And look, I'm with you. If the Saints can get three touchdowns defensively every week, they're going to be tough to deal with.
Their last game, they got the shit out in London against the Dolphins.
Yeah, they did. You're right.
Another wacky game
well,
here.
We think. Yeah.
Another wacky game. Rams-Jaguars. When I was looking at the schedule this week, I thought Rams-Jaguars was going to be like topic number two or three for us. This game was not beautiful. Both defenses were good, but this one started with a Farrah Cooper kickoff return start the game, and then I believe the first play from scrimmage was Leonard Fournette 75-yard touchdown run. So it went opening kickoff returned. Next kickoff is a touchback. First play from scrimmage. Fournette goes 75 yards. And after that, it was just so many punts.
Some games are like that. You're going to get up and down with the Rams like that. They're going to look great one week. They're going to look very bad the other week. It's nice. This was a game where they didn't look as good on offense, and they got the victory. It's nice to be, again, we said earlier in the show, mm-hmm. when you're not playing well and you can still win, that's a really good thing. It's the bad teams are the ones that lose when they don't play well.
Yeah, and just continuing with the nightmare week, Fournette left this game with an ankle injury, and he was limping pretty bad, so we'll see what happens long term.
I've heard he's fine. I think he said he's okay.
Yeah, it looked really bad when he was leaving the field, though. I don't know.
Yeah.
We'll see. Yeah. Bears Ravens Mitchell Trubisky gets his first career win, sort of leads the game-winning drive in overtime, although he only completed one pass during that drive. Ultimately, I mean, this is how the Bears want to win. He threw 16 passes in this game, completed 8. And this was a game where the Bears ran for 231 on that Ravens defense in Baltimore. So this was, this is no good for the Ravens.
Brandon Williams has been out at defensive tackle for the Ravens, and that's going to cost you at some point. He's too good of a player for that not to hurt your defense. So that's one thing. And then Michael Pierce, who was tremendous a year ago, I believe he was an undrafted rookie last season. He's a younger guy. He has not been as good this year. He's not been bad, but he has not owned games the way that he and Brandon Williams owned games last season. So bad day for Baltimore to give up that many rushing yards to a team that you knew could only beat you by running the ball.
Yep, and Joe Flacco was awful in this game. The Ravens got a 96-yard kickoff return and a 77-yard punt return, which actually tied it late in the fourth quarter, and they still lose at home to the Bears. That is bad. That's bad football. Texans-Browns, Deshaun Watson in off day only throws for 3 touchdowns, and this one was not competitive. It was 33-3 at one point midway through the third quarter, and the Browns are really bad and probably should have drafted Deshaun Watson last year or Carson Wentz the year before or just anyone since Johnny Manziel.
Well, be careful. It's easy to say that now. Keep in mind, Myles Garrett has looked good so far. We'll see what he looks like on film for this one, but it's a process in Cleveland. But at
yeah,
some point,
I mean,
you're right.
They,
winning
they
has to be part of the process at some point.
And they had the second crack at Watson, though. They traded down.
Yeah. Oh, you're right. You're right.
Watson,
you're right.
So yep. They could have had.
You're
both.
Right.
They could have had it all.
We'll see what they do. Interesting decision. They have to make at quarterback too with Hogan now. I wrote this week, I understood why they pulled Kaiser a week ago, but by doing that, they basically put themselves in a box where they could only get Kaiser back on the field if Hogan played poorly. And I guess Hogan at least got him out of that box if they want to be out of that box after today.
Yeah. And one more thing before we move on to weekly awards, Andy. Since the last time we spoke to each other, Navarro Bowman was let go by the 49ers. He's a free agent right now. There was a report that they had agreed to a trade to the Saints that fell through. He's set to visit the Raiders and Cowboys, but there it looks like a little recruiting blitz here for Bowman. I just want to ask you, what does Bowman have left in your estimation?
I don't think he's washed up. He's not what he was before, and I understand. I don't think he probably fit with the new regime there and San Francisco, and Reuben Foster is going to be healthy soon. And I think Ray Armstrong's looked pretty good this season. He's having his best year. So there was room to move on from Bowman for the Niners. I think if you're the Raiders, you do not let Bowman out the door. You tell him, hey, you're staying here in the Bay Area. I don't know what part of the Bay Area he lives in, but you know he probably could move to somewhere he's been before nearby because San Francisco used to be up the Bay before they went to Santa Clara. I do not let him leave. Remember what Perry Riley did for that team last year when he came in and solidified at linebacker? This is a better version of Perry Riley potentially, and they're in a worse spot with their linebackers in Oakland. Dallas doesn't need him. Dallas plays so many sub-packages anyway. Bowman's not going to be on the field for those. That's why San Francisco was comfortable letting him go, among other reasons. The Raiders could use him as an every-down linebacker. They badly need somebody there.
Number 10.
Topic 10, Andy. Weekly awards. Offensive player of the week. I'm going first. I'm giving it to Adrian Peterson.
That's a good one. I'm comfortable with that.
you said you talked him, you were talking him down on all the radio spots. I do all these radio spots that are fantasy specific, and everyone was asking about him. I said, maybe he'll have some games where he gets 12 to 15 touches and goes 70 yards, maybe gets a touchdown, but that's about it. And he did twice that, 26 from 134, 2 touchdowns. He was the focal point of this offense early, really set up a lot of things for Arizona and allowed them to. I mean, Larry Fitzgerald had some like 8 for 133 midway through the second quarter, and then obviously they sort of took the air out of the ball. But Adrian Peterson.
Yeah. I'll go with Evan Engram, tight end for the Giants. He's the only weapon on that team right now, and they knew they needed him. He showed up big against a Denver team that's done pretty well covering tight ends this season. Justin Simmons was the guy on him tonight. Evan Engram got the better of that matchup. You wonder if Denver, by the way, Gary, if they had a chance to do it again, if they would put Aqib Talib on Engram. And I know that sounds nuts. Talib's not an interior player.
Mm-hmm.
But Talib shadowed Charles Clay a few times when he was when Talib was a Patriot. Clay was the Dolphins' dynamic tight end. Clay was similar at that point in his career. He was similar to Evan Engram. I'm wonder if the Broncos will look back and regret not investing more defensively on Engram, because he was the only weapon and he got the job done tonight.
Yeah, and Talib, when he was with the Patriots, they had him guarding Jimmy Graham when the Saints came up there.
Did they do that? Well, yeah, he guarded tight ends at times in New England.
Yeah,
they would put him on. He's big. He's long. He can do that.
Yes.
And also, the Giants wound up running the ball well, but you didn't know they were going to coming in. Denver also could have reasoned that Ingram's not a run blocker anyway. It's not a very good running game. We're not going to have Talib. Talib's not going to kill us if he was on Engram. Didn't happen. So, you know, and we're not going to know for another 4 years at least, and Talib, if he'll even be a Bronco when these teams play again.
Mm-hmm. Defensive player of the week. I'm giving it to Stephon Tuitt, who I was surprised didn't end up with a sack today. He was just sort of right around Alex Smith all game. And the thing I always like about Tuitt is when he doesn't get penetration and sort of a play starts to get extended by a quarterback like Smith, he's so fast that it's like there are a couple times where it looked like Smith might escape around the outside of the pocket and you can't get around. You can't get around to it. There, he's too fast for a quarterback to outrun to the corner there. So he was a big difference maker in this one for the Steelers, who really beat up the Chiefs.
I'll go Casey Hayward, cornerback for the Chargers. He won his battles on the perimeter again. He's had a really nice stretch of the last few weeks and has held up, being once again the number one guy with Jason Verrett unfortunately out there.
Yeah. Special teams player of the week, Andy. Lots of weird plays, lots of returns and long kicks and missed kicks.
I'll go with the sequence I saw. I watched that Raiders game closely. Who's the is it Kondo? Is that the name of the long snapper?
For the Raiders?
Yes.
Oh, you're going to give it to the guy who blew it again?
Well, I thought he went up and he gave the guy, he took blame. He took the blame.
Okay.
Went up on the sideline and said, "My bad," to the kicker. "That's on me." And I thought that took courage. That's all the special teams I saw this week, because I was fast-forwarding through it once again. And so I can only go to Kondo because I don't know anybody else.
All right. You get me with that every week. I think you're going to give a really good insight. And then you just give it to a long snapper who missed a snap.
I did a real one 2 weeks ago. Nah, I don't know these guys, man. I'm not going to just I'll go talk with Skip Bayless if you want to hear me just pull it out and guess. We're not going to do that.
That would be a good show. FS1 will greenlight that. My special teams of the week is Pharaoh Cooper, who almost blew that game, that Thursday night game in San Francisco with that boneheaded ball he ran out of the end zone and fumbled. But he ran back the opening kickoff, and like we always say, when teams play the Jaguars, if you can get out and get a lead on them, and that's they literally on the opening kickoff, they got a lead on them. Thanks to Pharaoh Cooper. Coach of the week. A lot of good candidates this week, Andy. Do you want to go first or second? I have two guys queued up if you want to go first.
I assume we're both going McAdoo, right? Is that who one of your two guys is?
You can go McAdoo.
I'll take McAdoo. Who's your other guy then?
Well, I'll give it to Gase. I'll give it to Gase with everything the Dolphins have gone through this season and specifically this week to be down 17-0 at halftime in Atlanta and come up with a win.
And I'll tell you, I met with Chris Forster once a few years ago,
mm-hmm.
and it was at the Combine, and I guess it was kind of in a public setting, because later Adam Gase saw me, tracked me down, and said, "Hey, just want you to know, that was the best offensive line coach in the NFL that you were meeting with right there." I'm sure that was really hard on Adam Gase to lose that particular assistant, and especially in that fashion.
Yeah. No, that's That's not cool. It's not cool what he did. Not cool, the way that went down. Bummer all around. John Fossil too. That was my third alternate, second alternate, I guess. Number three.
For the special teams or just coach
Rams,
of the week.
Rams,
he's a good.
Teams.
They like him a lot there, and he survived the regime change. He was not McVay's guy. You know, anywhere else, McVay inherited him, and they love him there.
No, survived the regime change, and they've had a couple of special teams botches. I mean, Tavon Austin was giving away a punt a game with the first couple weeks of the season here, and they end up getting the Cooper kickoff return on the opener. They blocked a punt and got a touchdown off of that. So, good week for John Fossil. He gets an honorable mention. We'll send him the gift card to Target. you've been sending those, right, Andy?
Yeah, I've been. Yep. I'm all over it. On top of it, only to the special teamers.
That's a wrap. That's it. This was a week. This was a mind-blowing week.
Always is. That's the NFL. Now, you know what? By the way, you're never going to hear us say, I hope. I try never to. I don't think I ever have. This is a wacky season. What a wacky season. Every season, you know, this is the NFL. This is how it goes. Every week's a new week.
All right. I'll go with that. But I thought this was particularly wacky. I don't find it wacky that often. I thought this was a really wacky week.
That's what everybody said. They always go, "Why? I know it's wacky. Sometimes I don't find it wacky." And they give an excuse, and then they say how wacky it is.
I mean, come on. The number of multi-special teams touchdown games and Dolphins win in Atlanta and Giants win in Denver, and it was crazy.
In NFL week six, man.
Always week six. I'll just say that because no one will go back and research it. But it's always week six. That's a wrap. We're not going to keep our producer, Shelby Royston, up any later. It is way too late on Sunday night. Thank you, as always, to Shelby and Lou Pellegrino, as well as editor Chris Basil. The guys at Cadence 13 always make us sound good. Most of all, thank you to you guys for listening to this episode of the MFQB 10 Things podcast. Honestly, you are the best. We appreciate it so much that you choose to spend your time with us. Andy and I always want to hear from you on social media. We are both on Twitter, Andy_Benoit, GGramlich_SI. We are both on Facebook under our given names. You can also get us at talkback@themmqb.com. Tell us what you like, what you hate. Or send us questions, and we will answer questions at some point, even if we end up saving them for the offseason. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of the MMQB Podcast with Albert Breer, the MMQB Podcast with Peter King, and, of course, this show, the MMQB 10 Things Podcast, wherever you listen to your podcasts, including the MMQB.com, SI.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, and other podcast providers. We will see you guys for another wacky week.
Tip of the hat to Albert, another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys. And Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.